the best in internet talk radio.
A mind-bendingly ingenious plan to control the universe.
We're building the best internet talk radio on the planet. TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Hi, Hub Arkish here along with Jim Clemens and Mike Wilkening as we bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from the NBA, college basketball, and the NFL as well.
We have the latest NFL draft buzz, plus a closer look at the NBA draft's early entries.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News!
Welcome one and all to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. I'm Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, along with our senior editor, Mike Wilkening. From the Los Angeles Lakers bench, assistant coach Jimmy Clemens is our co-host throughout the basketball season. And, you know, every week, guys, I introduce Steve Kyler as our favorite guest, the publisher of Hoops World, but he might as well just be our NBA co-host because Steve is good enough to check in with us each week and is the only place that you want to go. That'd be hoopsworld.com for the very best in NBA insiders information. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It is hoopsworld.com. And Steve, I will start with you. One of the ugly, I've got a pretty good stomach. I'm not a guy who turns away when I see some of this stuff on film or on TV or on the highlight film. But the Andrew Bogut shot going down on that elbow was about as ugly as anything I've ever seen. And he's already had the surgery. The news apparently not good, certainly for this season. And what do you know about even the future?
Well, that is going to be the big question there, Hub, is what is the future? There were a lot of ligament things that are involved there. Whenever you see a severely dislocated, you know, body part as bad as Andrew's elbow was, you have to wonder how that's going to affect him next year and going forward, especially on the shooting hand. He did have some surgery on his wrist as well. You know, they're saying it was a successful surgery, and we always joke about that. That means the patient didn't die on the table. Doesn't necessarily mean it won't have an adverse effect on him next season. And, you know, it's kind of a shame because he was really having a career year on all aspects of the floor, both offensively and defensively, and was really starting to look like one of the best centers in the league.
Well, and Jimmy, at the point of the injury, the only team in the NBA with a better record the second half of the season than the Bucks were the Cavaliers. I mean, they were playing great basketball. And we've seen guys take falls like this before, get kind of hung up in midair. But the unfortunate long shopping list is broken right hand, badly sprained wrist, which, as Steve pointed out, required some surgical repair, and a dislocated elbow. And Jimmy, I don't think I've ever seen anybody take such an ugly fall, even though he did get his feet taken out from under. You have to wonder in that split second what he was thinking as he put that arm out there.
Well, it's a terrible loss for Milwaukee and certainly for Andrew. And I can only be sympathetic and empathetic to their coach, their staff, and what they're going to go through here to the finish out the season. It's a real shame.
Well, and it certainly changes the projections for the Bucks in the playoffs, even though they've played very good basketball. Bogut was at the center of it all, no pun intended. And so it eliminates maybe that possible fifth contender in the East. And as you look at the East playoffs, Jimmy, the Chris Bosh injury the other night. Now, this one, at least more of a normal basketball play. You can see how it happens. It doesn't appear to be as serious, anywhere near as serious as Bogut, but it is a displaced nasal fracture. And the reports I saw this morning is that he's probably through for the little bit that's left of the regular season, and they're not even sure should they hang on to that last playoff spot if he could be ready for the playoffs.
Absolutely, and I've been reading the accounts myself, and as you reported, they're talking about it says out for weeks. Weeks is an indeterminate amount of time, but certainly it doesn't bode well for Toronto with the record that they've had when he's been injured in the past.
Steve, as we tape the show, the Raptors with a half-game lead over the Bulls for that last playoff spot, they're one better in the loss column, but it might as well be a game and a half because they do hold the tiebreaker. Apparently, Hedo Turkoglu also suffered a broken nose, and even though it's only, I believe, 4 games, you know, can the Raptors hang on to that playoff spot? And does it really matter because either them or the Bulls are going to get the Cavs in the first round anyway?
Well, I honestly, I would rather see the Bulls get in there than the Raptors because the Raptors really have been limping along. The injuries are just one part of a bigger problem that's going on in Toronto, and they would certainly be the team you'd poise to see the sweep. I think the Bulls can at least give the Cavaliers a run Whether or not they're going to win some games, I think, is another story. You know, the Bulls have been battling their own injuries. They're finally back healthy at the right time, and they seem to be the team that's in control of their own destiny. They're going to see the Toronto Raptors this weekend. They'll get a chance to clean it up and maybe move into the driver's seat. But without Chris Bosh and without Hedo Turkoglu, I really don't think Toronto's going to have the horses to get it done. And, you know, unlike Milwaukee, who's still winning games without their big man, I don't think Toronto can win any games without Chris Bosh.
Well, and Wilkie, Steve just touched on the point I was going to make. If not for the ridiculous run of injuries right after the All-Star break with the Bulls, where Joakim Noah missed almost 4 weeks, Lual Deng missed a couple weeks, Derrick Rose missed a couple games, Kirk Heinrich was out for several weeks, you have to assume they'd be in better control of their playoff destiny had they not had a similar run of injuries. And much like they did with Boston in the first round last year, albeit without Kevin Garnett, are they a team that can give a run to the Cavaliers in the first round?
We're talking about a team that would have nothing to lose, considering I think expectations for them have kind of fallen off a cliff in the second half of the season because of the injuries, because of how they've struggled. Certainly their track record would indicate that they have the youth and talent to be dangerous in a first-round type series. And yeah, I think they could win a game or two versus Cleveland. I certainly don't think they could knock them off, but they could do some things maybe that would make it interesting vis-a-vis the real discussion here. How much longer does Vinny Del Negro get to coach this team going forward?
We'll pick up on that thought right there on the other side of this commercial break. It's the big question in Chicago. Let's see what Steve Kyle and Jimmy Clemens think about it. We're back with more NBA Way We Hear It, all the inside news from Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, as well as our featured guest every week, Steve Kyler, the publisher at HoopsWorld.com. For the very best in NBA insiders information, get to HoopsWorld.com. And Steve, you know, I personally didn't understand how Vinny Del Negro survived after last season in spite of the great run that the Bulls had against the Celtics in the playoffs. Is there any chance he comes back to fight again next year?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate for Vinny because I think he's kind of in a similar situation to Mike Woodson. I don't think anybody on the team wants him there. I don't think ownership, management, anybody in any control level, but he keeps winning enough games to say, well, do we really need to fire him? Is there really grounds to fire him? I think Vinny's done. I think the writing is kind of on the wall there. You know, the guys just really don't buy into what he does. You know, I've heard things about, you know, players listening to the coaches meeting and then huddling up and doing their own thing afterwards. And I think if you look at their game tape, you can see that, and you can see the frustration on Vinny. You know, I think Vinny will probably be a successful coach at some point in his career. You know, it generally takes two or three jobs before somebody finds the spot that's right for them. And this is just Vinny's first stop. I think somebody will hire him again. I think he will get an opportunity again in the NBA. I just don't know that he's going to be the Chicago Bulls coach next year.
Well, Jimmy, the opposite end of the spectrum in Denver, where the Nuggets and their fans cannot wait for George Karl to return to the bench. He has completed 6 weeks of radiation treatment. There is no timetable for him to get back to the bench, but that is the plan. And at this point, is that difficult for this Nugget team that has gotten used to playing for Adrian Dantley now, or is it the best thing that could happen to him as they head into the playoffs?
Well, I think what's going to happen is the fact that Adrian has had an opportunity to evaluate and see how the team's run. George is sitting back looking at it. And there's always a different rhythm when someone else takes the helm. And they hear him, but their execution isn't as crisp. They've had some injuries of their own. You know, Anderson's out. You know, he may be back tonight for tonight's game as we tape. But the fact is they haven't played the defensive intensity that they have when you have your head coach there who's pulling the string. So they're a little bit slacked off, but the fact remains they're going to come, they're going to play hard because they know what's at stake with that, with them sliding up and down in the positions not yet set for the playoffs.
Hey, Jimmy, I know it's tough for you as you travel around or even when you're at home in L.A., your focus is obviously on your ball club and preparing for Lakers games, but I'm guessing most of our listening audience has seen at least the highlight, if they didn't see live, the last shot of that great game between the Thunder and the Jazz earlier this week. Kevin Durant clearly got fouled on a three-point attempt that would have given him the ball game. No foul was called. The NBA later admitted a foul should have been called. I don't understand why these leagues do this, because that just exacerbates the problem. You can't change history. How frustrating and how difficult it is for a ball club and a coaching staff when something like that happens.
Our coaching staff had breakfast this morning. We were wondering the same thing. Here you go. Coaches get fined for talking about officiating, period, and then they issue a statement saying a call should have been made. So, you know, if I'm a Oklahoma City fan, I'm saying, you know, find time to, you know, come out and talk about this. But I think there has to be some level of transparency going on. So obviously they want to put our fan base at rest and saying, yes, our officials do make mistakes from time to time, and this is an obvious one.
Steve, you look at this race in the West, and again, we're taping late on Thursday. Jimmy getting ready for a big meeting between the Lakers and the Nuggets, but you've got the Jazz, the Nuggets, the Mavericks. They're all sitting there basically locked up, another half a game or a game behind them sit the Spurs and the Thunder. I leave the Suns out of the equation. I can't do that, of course. It doesn't get any easier in the West. Is there a favorite in your mind as to who emerges from that three-way tie right now for that second spot?
Well, I mean, really, of the bunch that's right there in the middle, I really like how Phoenix is playing. And, you know, when you look at a team that's really winning 90-95% of their games down the stretch, that's getting hot at the right time. You know, Utah, Portland, San Antonio, I think that those are formidable teams that, you know, we look at some of the struggles they've had earlier. All of those teams are ready for postseason play. You know, they're not battling any serious injuries. So it's really going to come down to how do you balance out the end of the schedule. I think Oklahoma City, just by virtue of being the younger team and the less experienced of the bunch, probably ends up in that eight seed. But, you know, I don't want to put Coach on the spot here. If there's a matchup I want to see in the first round, it's Lakers-Oklahoma City. The young versus the experienced, or the championship versus the contender. I think Oklahoma City is going to be a fun team in the playoffs.
Steve, let me ask you real quickly. We've got the list starting to grow now. You've got Cole Aldrich, Xavier Henry, Evan Turner, the entire Kentucky roster all declaring early for the NBA draft. Is it as simple as John Wall and then we'll see what's next, or is there going to be a debate at who comes off the board first?
Well, you know, I think there's going to be a debate. I think a lot of it comes down to who gets the number one overall pick on May 18th in the NBA draft lottery. You know, John Wall has kind of been the consensus number one, you know, throughout the whole process. But, you know, I'll back you up 2 years when Michael Beasley was the consensus guy all the way up to the draft lottery. And then it was Derrick Rose became the number one overall pick. So I think a lot of it does come down to who gets that number one pick. You know, as the standings stand today, it looks like New Jersey would be at least your statistical favorite. And they say, you know, even though they've got a Devin Harris on the roster, they would take a John Wall number one, although I think Evan Turner by far is the better player for them. I think if you start looking at the teams that could be in the top three, Evan Turner's probably the better player for all three of them. You know, I don't think Golden State needs a point guard. They've got a pretty good one in Steph Curry. So I think a lot of teams are going to have to figure out, do they want to try to duplicate things and bring in John Wall and have two really good point guards that's worked out well for New Orleans this year, or do you want to go with a guy like Evan Turner who could be, you know, the Brandon Roy kind of game changer of the bunch? It's going to be an interesting discussion for whoever gets that number one pick.
All right, Jimmy and Mike, I'll get your thoughts on that in just a moment. We're going to cut Steve loose. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll finish up the draft talk and talk some college hoops right on the other side of these commercials. Back with more Pro Football Weekly and basketball news. Actually, I just very quickly, before I introduce our next guest, I promised a quick comment from Jim Clemens and Mike Wilkening on the subject we were discussing before the break. You know, Jimmy, you look at the success of Derrick Rose, Rookie of the Year 2 years ago. Tyreke Evans could be the Rookie of the Year this year. They came out of John Capillary's program. Do you almost have to look at John Wall with that first overall pick in the draft?
Well, I think you have to look at him, but once again, whoever has that number one pick, are they going to draft according to their needs, or because Wall's there and they say Wall was, you know, was adorned the person who's going to be the number one out anyway, just go ahead and fulfill that prophecy. I think it's going to depend upon the durability, the other players on the team, and the size that Turner has over Wall, and the durability and those other issues, rather than who's just going to be the number one pick.
All right, let me get our expert in, Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News, talks college basketball all year long and good enough to join us here at our show. Mike, thank you so much for joining us, and I guess that's where we'll start. Is John Wall the de facto number one NBA choice, or do you have to look at maybe even his teammate DeMarcus Cousins, or certainly Jimmy mentioned Evan Turner?
Well, you know, I think that Wall is a clear-cut number one, and you know, one of the interesting things that I've heard develop is that some teams that feel like they're in good shape at point guard wouldn't feel the need to draft him and might instead draft Turner. I love Evan Turner as much as anybody short of his family, but I don't see him as being a great player if he's not a point guard. I think he loses some of his impact on the game. He's not a spectacular shooter. He's not a spectacular athlete. He's a very good athlete, but not, you know, not a Jason Richardson off the charts athlete. So at that point, you say to yourself, well, what makes him extraordinary? And what made him extraordinary was when he switched to the point. So if you're taking him on the basis that you're going to convert him back to wing, I don't know that you're getting number one value at that point. And DeMarcus, I think, will be an unbelievable rebounder in the league, and he's a very good shot maker for a guy his size. I think he's a very risky proposition based on work ethic and temperament and that sort of thing. And he's a better kid than people think he is, but he really does struggle with effort and that sort of thing.
Well, in that case, Mike, why, if I'm sitting back, I'm an owner and I'm a GM, if I've got work ethic issues, and a young man where he had a wonderful freshman year on an obviously very talented team, and I'm looking at what I'm trying to develop and grow, why should I pick a kid that I've got questions about?
That's what I think. And, you know, I think at some point in the draft, and it becomes more a matter of, well, the guy's so much more talented than his downside that you have to take him. And what that pick is it depends on what you think of the other players in the draft. And it could be as high as two or three. But I don't think that there's a player in the draft like Wall with no questions about who he is and what he is, which I think he's as extraordinary an athlete as there has been at the point guard position. So then you have that, and you have a high character kid who's a winner, who's made big plays in games, who played 34 minutes a game. The thing about that I think any team has to ask itself about Cousins is, why did he only play 23 minutes a game? Stamina, maybe that's an issue. Foul trouble, I think that was an issue. I think there were times he came out of games because he wasn't doing his job the way it was supposed to be done. And I think all those things are issues. And again, he's so gifted that there becomes a point in the draft where you just say, well, I think I can't pass this because I'd rather take a chance that he'll succeed than just get an okay player. But I certainly don't think that position is at one.
Mike, when you look a little bit more at some of the early entries, the other team that jumps out that really took a hit with guys leaving and signing with agents is Kansas, with Cole Aldrich leaving and also Xavier Henry also leaving as well. Can you talk about the impact of those losses and where you kind of expect those guys to fit in the draft?
You know, I think that Kansas kind of knew that they were going to lose both guys. So when you have a feeling and you know that it's coming, you can sort of prepare for it a little bit. And Kansas still has the Morris twins, and they have Jeff Withey, who came in from Arizona, who didn't get to play very much. But when you're playing behind the Morrises and behind Cole Aldrich, that it's not that much of an insult to not play a whole lot. So I think that they'll still have a chance to be a very good team. I didn't think Xavier really ever gave them what they hoped he would, and I think that was reflected in the ultimate result that they achieved, losing in the second round. Sometimes you take a chance on a kid and it just doesn't go all the way. And, you know, I don't think he was a problem for them, but I don't think that he fulfilled what they hoped.
Mike, let me ask you quickly about the two big hirings this past week. Oliver Purnell leaves Clemson to take over the DePaul Blue Demon program, and Boston College hires Steve Donahue away from Cornell. And, you know, I understand the allure of a young basketball coach or even a middle-aged basketball coach to leave the Ivy League and go coach in the Big East, and I'm sure it's more money. But isn't that also a comment on Donahue acknowledging that Cornell team, as great as they were with all those kids graduating, that that's a once every 5-10 year type deal, that was going to be really hard to repeat?
Oh, it would have been nearly impossible to repeat. We haven't had an Ivy team reach that far in the tournament in, I think, 30-some years. So I think that if he were to have stayed at Cornell, he would have been looking at trying to win the Ivy League, get a bid, and probably lose in the first round for the next several years until maybe he got lucky again. You have to realize, I mean, when you're making, you know, nice money as a head basketball coach and you can make unbelievable money, sometimes it's just hard to turn down the opportunity to become that much more wealthy. To me, the real issue is on BC's side. And can Steve Donahue do that much better than what Al Skinner was doing? They were making the tournament most years. I mean, 70% of the time they were making the tournament. I'm not sure that Steve is necessarily the guy. I'm not saying that Steve won't do as well, but was it really necessary to make a change if that's the direction you're going to go? I mean, because Steve has not recruited high major players.
Well, and let me interrupt, Mike, but quickly let me ask you, because you just mentioned the money as a factor. The reports we're hearing is that the money was not that dramatically different for Oliver Purnell at DePaul than it was at Clemson.
Oh no, it was dramatically different. I mean, he was low ones. That if the money that they were saying about the 7 years and the $2 million, that's bigger. I mean, he was making much less than that at Clemson. Clemson was not paying him anything close to $2 million. So you know, they may be trying to paint it that it wasn't a money deal. That you know, he saw the challenge and all that kind of stuff, but it's a money deal. And I don't blame Oliver for that at all. I mean, he was never going to win an NCAA championship at Clemson, and he probably won't win one at DePaul, but he may make them significantly better, and he'll make a lot more money.
All right, Mike DeCoursey, good enough to join us, the college basketball editor for the Sporting News. We take a commercial break, and we talk a little bit of football right on the other side. That's right. We do both football and basketball here, and I'm going to have some fun now with one of the best assistant coaches in the NBA. Jim Clemens is a football fan like the rest of us, and Jimmy, we were kidding about it off the air, so let me ask you about it on the air. You know, there's really two separate questions here. I have serious doubts as to what the Eagles were smoking, drinking, and thinking before they decided to deal Donovan McNabb at all. But then you deal him in the division to a team you're going to play twice every year. I mean, is Andy Reid that confident that he knows how to stop Donovan McNabb? Is he that genuine in saying he wanted to respect his feelings? Or did he just make a huge mistake?
Well, obviously, he, meaning Coach Reid, knows something that we don't know. Because in our profession, if you have an opportunity to ship a player that you like and you like very well, you get him out of your conference, get him out of your division, so that you only have to play him a minimum amount of time. So I was almost astounded because, you know, being in California and word has that, you know, he had an opportunity to go to Oakland. We were all thinking that, well, that'd be a good chance for him. But the fact is, when you're dealing to the Washington Redskins, that is that's a statement in itself.
It really is, and it's got people scratching their heads as to why they would do it. Andy Reid insists it's just out of respect to the player who got him 5 NFC titles and 1 Super Bowl trip. It's going to be a story worth watching. And before we let you go, I know you got a big game to get ready for this evening. We were talking a little bit of early NBA draft. You look at a monster specimen like a DeMarcus Cousins at 6'11", 270, and the kid absolutely with an NBA body, and yet some issues upstairs that you worry about, especially with 19-year-old kids. We're going to go very heavily towards NFL college draft coverage over the next couple of weeks. And as you look at the NFL and you look at the trend in the NFL to draft athletes rather than football players, do you run into that as much in the NBA, and is it as dangerous in the NBA as it's proven to be in the NFL?
Well, I think that's the trend in all sports. And you can see it even in college recruiting. Coaches want athletes. And I'm of the other school of thought, I want basketball players. I understand athleticism, being able to run, jump, and do spectacular things, but at the end of the day, you still need skillful players, and by the time you have players who understand and can manipulate your system and can do things that they need to do athletically, they want to leave because they're going to chase the money. And basketball players are left behind because they aren't the athletes. So once again, it's a catch-22, but at the end of the day, I'm a basketball coach. I'd like to have basketball players.
Yeah, you know, Jimmy, I gotta tell you, I was blessed to get to know Jim Finks very well, one of the great general managers and talent analysts in the history of the NFL before he passed away. And he once told me that his theory of drafting football players was, I want big studs on the offensive and defensive line. And at every position, I want kids who've been very productive in college, who've been winners in college, and who've played at big time programs. He made it that simple, and he built 3 different playoff dynasties that way. So I think there's something to your school of thought.
Let's hope so.
All right, let's hope so. Jimmy, go ahead and get ready for the big game. We tape again late in the week. Lakers taking on the Nuggets tonight. Jim Clemens will be back with us again next week, as he is throughout the basketball season. We wish you good luck over the weekend. I'm going to shift over to Wilkie right now, and Mike will talk a little bit of NFL way we hear it. And the Houston Texans, really curious, have added ex-Cardinal place kicker Neil Rackers, but they have not released their longtime kicker, Chris Brown, who has been their place kicker since the beginning of the franchise in 2002. Apparently, there's going to be a training camp competition. We normally don't get too excited about kickers on this show, but this is a very interesting situation.
Yes, Hub, and it's interesting for a couple of reasons. I think, first of all, I think it kind of puts where the Texans are at this kind of stage of their development into context. They've never made the playoffs. They were 9-7 last year, and Chris Brown missed a couple of key kicks that could have sent games into overtime. And he struggled last year. He's been someone that's been with the franchise since the beginning. But, you know, obviously he's a guy that they want to pick up his play if he wants to be the kicker going forward. And Neil Rackers is someone that historically has been a little bit more accurate than Chris Brown. You know, but has also had some seasons where he's been a little bit inaccurate as well, and comes off a season where he missed kind of a big kick in the playoff game versus Green Bay. So I think it's going to be a fascinating competition. I think that clearly what the Texans are demanding is somebody that's going to make all the kicks that are supposed to be made, and including the clutch ones too. And I tend to think that it's really a competition that's going to be very, very interesting as it unfolds.
All right, Wilkie, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to get back to Mike for what has become our weekly Pittsburgh Steeler court report on the other side, as well as the rest of the guys from Pro Football Weekly with NFL Way We Hear It coming up next. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. We're talking NFL Way We Hear It, and we welcome in senior editor Eric Edholm. Eric covers the NFC East, amongst other NFL ball clubs for us. And for those of you who didn't hear, there was a little trade earlier in the week in the NFL East, and Eric, across the country, people are scratching their heads. Okay, one thing to trade Donovan McNabb. There's a lot of folks outside of Philadelphia who didn't even understand why they wanted to do that. But to trade him to Washington inside your own division, Andy Reid says it was out of respect to McNabb. It's not a game of respect when you're getting rid of assets. Just don't really understand what the Eagles were thinking here.
Yeah, it's an interesting move because, yes, I mean, I think there was enough history between the two of them where McNabb, you know, probably on some level earned an opportunity for another team to jump in. That team just happened to be the Redskins, whom they play twice a year. So it's really interesting because on the one hand, it was a respectful move to McNabb because he didn't want to play for Oakland or Buffalo. But on the other hand, it was a disrespectful move because he's saying, we're not afraid of you. We're going to play you twice a year, and that's just fine with us. So, you know, the Eagles right now are kind of caught in an interesting situation. They've got a young quarterback they like a lot. The team's rallying behind him. He's got some ability. Obviously, Kevin Cobb could be something special, but they don't know. They've got two starts to look at so far. And, you know, they're a very young team. I mean, they're caught somewhere between contending and rebuilding right now.
But let's break this out one more step from the Eagles' point of view, and then we'll talk about the Redskins, Eric. Yeah, Kolb is an interesting young prospect. He's got two NFL starts. He threw for 300 yards in both games. He's 1-1. He got clobbered by the world champion New Orleans Saints. The other team that he beat up was the Kansas City Chiefs with one of the worst defenses in the league. You just traded a quarterback with five NFC title games, six Pro Bowls, a trip to the Super Bowl. The guy sitting on the doorstep of Canton, you don't find those guys all that often. And dealing him in his prime at the age of 33 for a guy who you hope is the next one, this is a bust or boom move for the Philadelphia Eagles.
I'll try to play the role of Andy Reid in this situation, say that I think if you're the Eagles, they looked at the situation and thought, you know what? Maybe we had just kind of reached the ceiling with Donovan. We'd gotten all we could out of him. He led us to five NFC championship games, one Super Bowl. They never could quite get over the hump and win that title. You know, he's had a number of injuries over the years, and there may be information we're not aware of. Maybe that, you know, Donovan's a little more broken down, years of getting beat up. There's also the fact with this contract, they had three quarterbacks whose deals run out after the 2010 season, so they had to make a move on one of them. You know, they didn't want to let Donovan get away without getting something for him. They get the 37th pick in the draft. This could really give him some flexibility.
All right, Eric, the Redskins to this point have retained Clinton Portis. They've added Larry Johnson and Fast Willie Parker, and now they've added Donovan McNabb. They need to do some work on the offensive line. They do have the fourth pick in the first round of a draft deep in left tackle talent in that first round. How much better does this make the Washington Redskins?
Well, if it was 2006, they'd be the NFL, they'd be the Super Bowl champions with those four guys. But, you know, they're also in a real interesting spot, Hub. Their only pick in the top 100 is the number four selection in the draft. So, you know, there's a possibility at four that Russell Okung could go to the Lions at two, and you know, they're stuck in a situation where they have to go a little bit farther down their list on offensive tackles. So, you know, if they could find a way to trade down and still get one of those top guys, maybe a Brian Bulaga from Iowa. I spoke to him the other day. He met with the Redskins, one of the first teams he met with at the Combine. And also pick up some extra draft picks. They only have four right now, as we said, the one in the top 100. That would really help them because they're not a deep ball club. They're trying to make a transition to a 3-4. They've got some of these veteran pieces in place, but a lot of holes on that roster right now.
Yeah, but now I would think Jason Campbell, who I thought Shanahan liked, I know I like him a lot, and there's no point in keeping him. They brought Rex Grossman in to be the backup. I would think they could pick up a 3 and a 4, maybe even a 2 and a 4 or something like that for a Jason Campbell. Are those trade talks ongoing?
You'd think that he'd have more value than he does. I think, Hub, that the pulse around the league right now is that he's a clear step down from McNabb. And if McNabb is getting a 2 and a 3 or a 2 and a 4, depending on how the trade works out, Jason Campbell may only be worth a third or a fourth round draft pick. Some people even suggest as low as a fifth round pick. So a little bit surprising to us because he's a pretty good player, but you know, it's a guy who's only won 3 out of every 8 ball games he started in his career. So obviously a lot of that had to do with the talent around him.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. Wilkie, we've got to check quickly the case. The allegations against Ben Roethlisberger have now been turned over to the DA by the Milledgeville Police and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. The DA will decide whether there's a case and whether Ben Roethlisberger should be charged. What are you hearing as the latest on that story?
Hub, I think you've summed it up. There's just the allegations against Ben Roethlisberger. That investigation has been completed, and at this point, the district attorney has that investigation, that set of investigations, and can kind of make his decision either way at this point. But that's all we know at this point. That again, it's still an investigation that appears to be nearing a decision in terms of whether or not charges or not will be filed. But we don't have an answer at this point as to what is going to happen here.
Well, that and that the Steelers have strongly suggested that Roethlisberger doesn't need to be around the offseason program until they figure some of this out. We've got more NFL Way We Hear It NFL Draft Talk coming up next. The NFL College Draft is right around the corner, and that means that Pro Football Weekly, ProFootballWeekly.com, our Pro Football Weekly draft publications are the only place you want to be, and it is my pleasure to welcome to the program the author and the contributing editor and lead talent evaluator for Pro Football Weekly, Nolan Naraki. If you want a copy of Nolan's NFL Draft Preview Guide, our magazine, you want the NFL Draft Preview Book, which is a must-have for every draft nick out there, you can give us a call at 1-800-FOOTBALL. You can visit us at ProFootballWeekly.com, or you can listen to Nolan right now as we talk a little bit high level and start to break down the NFL draft. Nolan, it seems to be becoming a given that Sam Bradford should be the first player taken in this draft, particularly if St. Louis can't trade the pick. You've got the extra value at quarterback, but after that, you look at the defensive tackles and the offensive tackles, and there doesn't seem to be any real clear path.
I think it's still up for grabs. We've got to find out what Detroit's going to do. They've expressed some interest in trading down. I think a lot of teams up in that top 10 are exploring scenarios where they may be able to move back a couple spots and pick up some picks. So I think it's wide open right now. I think Ndamukong Suh from Nebraska, Gerald McCoy from Oklahoma, and Russell Okung from Oklahoma State are all going to be in that mix. They'll likely be top 5 picks, but it's still open to be determined if there are any trades.
You know, Nolan, I love the Sue kid and the McCoy kid. I think they're both going to be great players. But we know the risk that teams take with these top 3, top 5, top 10 picks, all the money invested. And one of the things we've seen in the last couple of years is that the offensive tackles, the Joe Thomases, the Jake Longs, the Ryan Clades, they've proven to be pretty safe investments. And so as you look at this group at the top, Okung, Williams, Davis, Bulaga, do they meet that standard? Are they the kind of prospects that the other kids I just mentioned have proven to be?
I think the most talented in this class is clearly Trent Williams. He's got the best feet. He ran in the 4.8s at the combine. He's got the most elite physical talent. The problem is that you're not sure what you're going to get. I mean, there's immaturity issues and there's questions about his overall character, and I think that's going to make teams nervous about drafting him. Russell Okung is the safest offensive tackle in the draft, and for that reason, he very likely will be the first drafted. Brian Bulaga from Iowa is also very safe. The other one that could potentially fit into that top 10 is Bruce Campbell. Even though he doesn't belong up there, there's no tape that supports him being a first-round pick. He could fit into the top 10 just because Al Davis is drafted in that area.
Nolan, I was going to say, if the Raiders take a tackle, then that's how Bruce Campbell gets into the group. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Two kids that I'm really puzzled about. You have to wonder how much the Redskins trade for Donovan McNabb cost Jimmy Clausen in terms of draft position and $1 million. There was a perception that he could have gone to the Redskins in that spot. Not sure what happens to him after that. And Dez Bryant is a kid that just seems to be so talented, and yet I see these two guys slotted all over the place, anywhere between 4, 5, and 6, down into the low teens and 20s. What do you see happening with these two players?
I'd be surprised if either of them got out of the top 15, just knowing the premium on the quarterback position and knowing how talented Bryant is. You know, he's got immaturity issues that very likely could show up. There have been comparisons to Mike Williams. You know, I think teams have been burned enough by receivers in the first round that they're going to be nervous about pulling the trigger too early. But I think at some point the talent's going to weigh out. You know, once you get past that 10th slot, you're looking at somewhere around $4 or $5 million a year. And, you know, the risk becomes worth the reward.
Nolan, a deep draft at the top, at least at offensive tackle and a defensive tackle, and yet, you know, we've seen a lot of cornerbacks and safeties in recent years go high. Not as easy to read this group this year, is it?
It's really a thin group cornerback-wise. I think Joe Hayden's established himself as a top corner. Alabama's Kareem Jackson has slowly been moving up draft boards. I think he's going to fit into that first-round area. And you got guys like Eric Berry and Earl Thomas, who I think are going to be drafted probably earlier than you'd want to draft a safety. So it's a thin group overall in the defensive back class, but there are some solid players at the top.
All right, Nolan, thank you very much. Just an appetizer for you this week. We go deep in the NFL college draft next week and the week after, and we're back in just a moment with our publisher's panel.
The publisher's pen. With the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arch.
Well, Wilkie, even though it is now 6-7 days in our rearview mirror, I don't see how we can say goodnight and goodbye to the college basketball season without talking about the wonderment that was the NCAA championship game last Monday night between the Duke Blue Devils and the Butler Bulldogs. Our hat at Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News is off to both teams for one of the great championship games in any sport at any level that we've ever gotten to witness. And what I think is so fascinating about it is that if you take a look, Mike DeCourcy, the college basketball expert from the Sporting News, was with us earlier in the show. He's already got his early top 10 out for 2010 and 11, and he's got Duke number 1 and Butler from the Horizon League number 4. Now, Duke will surprise nobody, but you take a look at that Butler team, and everybody but Willie Beasley's got the chance to come back, and it looks like they will be. So not only did we have an outstanding tournament this year, maybe one of the best of all time, one of the great championship games of all time, you've got two teams who are going to do it again next year, as well as a bunch of the other participants in the tournament. We expect the Big Ten to be strong next year with Ohio State, Michigan State, Purdue, all possibly top 10 teams. We look at Kansas State bringing most of their ball club back as well. It was a ton of fun this year, and we think it could be even better next year. Our hats off to everybody who participated in the tournament this year. That does it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Our thanks to Steve Kyler of HoopsWorld.com, Mike DeCourcy from Sporting News, Randy Meyer is our producer and engineer, and our home syndicator, Syndication Networks. Most of all, thanks to all of you. Be with us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.